From Puebla, it's Austin, Texas. This is Stacker News Live!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Stacker News Live. My name is Carr with my VFF Keon. Keon.
Hi.
How was your week?
Oh, it was a great week. Do you want to be my Valentine?
No, I do not.
Why that's not?
That's funny you asked me that. You didn't even tell me you were going to ask me that. That's hilarious.
Why? Why'd you say no?
No, because you're
married.
Why'd
you reject me?
You have a marriage, an ongoing marriage.
What if you can wife. Be? What are you going to have, like a Pauly Valentine set?
Oh, what is going on? Hard right in the beginning of the pod. Stackers.
No? Pink shirt today, Car. Really feeling this holiday.
I appreciate the offer. I'll take the candy, though.
Okay. So
like
you,
a typical
you
woman.
Want the, you want, typical you want to be woman friends with
I'll
benefits.
I'll take the candy and the flowers. But
okay. Fine.
Then, how was your week?
It was good. I think it was good. I don't really remember.
It's been cold in Austin.
Yeah, the weather. Cold. Weather's happening every day. So
yeah, it's been a really cold one for me. Like we finally got through round two of Top Builder last week, or round one of Top Builder last week. So it's been like full steam ahead for like a solid month and a half for everybody in Top Builder, and you know, it was kind of one of those things where I'm like, just need to get a break. So I took a couple days off in the beginning of the week because I was like. It was running since like December, whatever that was, December 28th or whatever.
Wow.
Or whenever I got back from vacation.
Yeah.
Now it's back to the grind, Keon. We gotta get to the top five for Top Builder. That's happening next Saturday. We're going to make the announcement and then startup day is on the 13th.
So. How many people are you cutting?
I mean, I think we're at 12. I have to double check, but I think we're at 12 or 13. So we're going to get it down to five, which is going to be tough, dude. Like, there's really great teams. No.
Do you give them any, like, counseling after you cut them?
No. They know they know what they signed
up for. They're builders.
For.
They know. They know what's up.
But, yeah, got a lot of good ones. That's what I've been up to this week. But if you've never seen this crazy show before, it's called Stacker News Live, covering all the top stories on Stacker.news, specifically the top five. And, you know, I'll share some stories. Keon will share some stories. We might talk about, you know, the Bitcoin ecosystem. We might talk about Luka getting traded to the Lakers and the future dynasty that might happen there. We might talk about all sorts of things. But if you want to go check it out, go to Stacker. Or actually, go here. First, go to our Twitter. DarthCoin, you should make us an Oster. And then from here, you can go to our Linktree. And you can see everything here. We're on YouTube. We're on Spotify. Click that subscribe button. Go here to Spotify. Oh, actually, yeah, go there. Spotify.
I like how your link on Stacker, your profile on Stacker News is above mine.
And so yours is there too.
I know it's there, but you rank them. You're in control.
Oh, wait. Oh, because it's, I think, yeah, it says Car and Keon recap.
Oh, I see. It's alphabetical.
I was actually going to say it's people who have more episodes that they showed up for.
Oh, how dare you!
I think I've only missed one episode. You've missed like 17, I think.
I don't think you've ever missed an episode. But I've missed two, I think, in the past. And we have.
I
always made sure I had fill-ins, substitutes.
You're saying I didn't have a fill-in that one time? I totally had a fill-in.
I don't remember.
Anyways, it's Stackers. Look it up.
But when you phone it in, you're like in the back. Oh, wow. You're like in the back of a Mexican restaurant, and where it was like.
So I'm phoning it in now. Okay, see what I do.
But it is literally phoning.
Anyway,
I didn't mean figurative with phoning.
Anyway, go hit subscribe, and let Keon know what my value is here on the show. Apparently.
Oh, how dare you!
Apparently. Now, anyways, we're gonna jump into the top five. The number five top story of the week is: if you could learn any skill you want without trying, which one would you pick? This is from Aardvark, February 10th, Ask SN Territory, 58 comments, 697 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, so, Aardvark asked this question. This question has been asked a lot of times on Stacker News, actually. It's our versions of this question. Like, what superpower would you have? But this is like a little, I guess, not a superpower. But what skill would you have? And but without trying. So you don't have to do anything. You don't have to do all the hard work that prevents you from having the skill today. And you could just say it, and you get it like you have a magic wand, And
yeah, so what did people pick?
Looks like electrical work, storytelling. I like that one a lot because that one's hard. But that one, I don't know. I feel like that one would be fun to learn on a relative basis. Instruments. Tom Kay, who works at Albee. I want to be able to dunk.
That would be fun, pretty actually. Yeah.
That would be a cool skill, but you'd need to be near a basketball hoop to show off.
Languages, somebody said languages.
Crypto Sensei, I think, already has a few languages. I think they speak Mandarin and Japanese already.
Isn't Mandarin supposed to be like a really hard language, or is that
maybe they don't
Cantonese
speak Mandarin
or something?
I know they speak some Japanese because they did that. And I know they're based in Singapore, but I don't know what their native tongue is because he says his wife is Japanese. I don't know.
I feel like there was like a, isn't there a specific language that has like many languages within it, like many divergent paths of communication or something? Ooh. Or am I thinking of like villages that make their own languages?
There's definitely within like a single country, there are lots of languages usually. Like I had an Uber driver the other day who spoke both Farsi. It was from Afghanistan. He speaks both Farsi, which my dad speaks, and he speaks Pashto, which
What's
is
another, Pashto?
I think it's like the main primary language of Afghanistan.
Oh, wow.
But he speaks Farsi with a different accent is what he said. So there, in most countries, they have quite a few dialects of... I don't actually know that.
Here, jump on the mic real quick.
We have Cascader
trying to say something,
saying that English has the most words. I see. English has the most words, and it's hard to learn. I've heard it's hard to learn before.
English is like a hybrid between French because of the Normans and all the Teutonic languages.
Something about Teutonic languages, not... Teutonic plague and something about front the yeah I know yeah lang more languages coding pilot
oh pilot
EK told me recently he's really gonna get serious about becoming a pilot. It's gonna be fun.
That makes sense.
Yeah, we can fly the pleb airplane.
That'd be cool.
Pleb jet.
Which one would you get, Keon, if you had
a... Oh, I said my answer to all these questions is making friends. I think
really?
I know it's like a thing that people think comes easily, and it maybe it does. But I think it's one thing that I'd never get tired of getting good at. I just think it's probably the most valuable skill you can put. Because you think about it, like maybe like it's the skill that gives you all other skills, because maybe I can't do electrical work, but if I made great friends with someone who does do electrical work, they can do it for me. If I don't know languages, I can bring a friend with me to Japan and they can order me my ramen. And so I just think it's like the best skill to have.
That's a good outlook.
Yeah.
Really good outlook. Pretty cool. Playing piano. I saw that down there.
What about you? What would be yours?
Oh, you can't be a superpower, right?
No, it has to be a skill. It, be like a it real, can look like a superpower because you're so good at it.
I really love to learn how to fly.
In an aircraft?
What's a skill that you need to solve really hard things?
What is a skill? Just generically, it's probably...
Like really hard problems.
A certain kind of intelligence.
Yeah, whatever that skill is I want.
Okay.
Like how to solve extremely hard problems that maybe only like 5% of the population can solve. I want that skill. I don't know what that would be.
Yeah, because it's not like those people solve all kinds of hard problems. People who solve hard problems usually solve very hard problems in one specific area because they've studied that area their whole lives. But you want that.
Whatever.
You want the skill.
I guess the skill, you know, it'd be like total recall of everything that I've read or experience. I think whatever that is, like, because I don't have total recall.
Total recall.
I have like
memory.
A quarter recall. Yeah. That's the
I don't really like memory that.
But there's people that, like, my younger brother, dude, has total recall of everything that he reads. Like, learn. Like, he's the only guy I've ever met that if I told him that he couldn't play drums, he would learn how to play drums within a month. It's like, he's one of those guys.
Wow.
Yeah.
What is he?
Pretty nuts.
Does he, is he a drummer? Or what is he?
No. I'm saying, like, he can, like, go and, like, learn something. There was one, like, he's, like, give you another example. Younger brother David, we were playing basketball when we were kids and stuff like that. He wanted to play with some of the older kids, but he was just too short and not any good. And literally, like, spent the whole summer, like, learning how to play, learning how to shoot. And then, like, one day my mom came home and I didn't even know he was doing this. He was doing this, like, behind our backs. And then, like, one day my mom came home and she was freaking out because he was playing with all the brothers, you know? Mm-hmm. And she was like, what are you doing out there playing with those guys? She was freaking out like a normal mom would because she didn't understand, like, what was going on. And I was like, no, he's just playing basketball. But he learned how to play, like, through the legs, through all this kind of stuff. And it was just like, we were all blown away. We were like, what? When did you learn how to do this skill? And he was shooting. He was, like, making. These guys were, like, in their 20s, 18. And here's this, like, 11-year-old. It's like, what?
Nice.
I don't know how we got to that comment, but.
That sounds awesome.
It's one of those. Whatever that skill is, I want.
Okay. You want the skill of your brother.
Yeah, probably, yeah. He had it's really good. Anyways, let's jump into number four top story of the week. It's The Right Real Suffering. This is from Mostly Harmless Elvis Mercury. Or Mostly Harmless Territory, Elvis Mercury posted this. 27 comments, 1,265 sats. Keon, what's Elvis talking about this time?
Yeah, he's just writing, I guess, or querying about suffering, querying for thoughts on suffering. Kind of has some loose thoughts on suffering, and maybe, I guess, it's sort of like a query, like things that he's trying to figure out about suffering, how to think about suffering. Elvis uses the word right a lot. Like, what is the right kind of suffering? Is what he's asking here. What is real suffering? Likes to get to, like, the base of things with that type of language. He links to a great talk in here at Stanford Business School by, I think CEO of Alpine Investments, I think. Maybe Alpine Ventures, who just talks about going through the financial crisis, being a CEO, and then how he kind of framed his rebound and with the help of, like, an executive coach.
Is it this one right here?
That would be it.
The one thing that stuck out big for me in this talk was the executive coach basically has him do the self-journaling that Jordan B. Peterson is an advocate of.
Love watching this stuff.
Yeah. Where you basically write about your future self, like your aspirational future self. And another thing he says I think is a really nice frame is, like, ignore how. Ignore how you're going to get what you want to get. Just try to identify really what you want and deal with how after the fact. Because a lot of people will start at how. And it'll, like, block them from imagining what they actually want. And anyway, great talk there, but it discusses suffering in a variety of ways, and, you know, how usually involves suffering, especially early on, is another thing he talks about. But it's just, we're generally talking in this thread about suffering and how we think about it, each of us.
Yeah, Siggy had he said, I'm not sure it's the same thing, but when I was struggling as a young person, I had my if only list in quotations. Once you achieved a goal, there was always another one right around the corner to be anxious about. That is suffering. I think of Bob Dylan's When I Paint My Masterpiece, the line, someday everything's going to be different when I paint my masterpiece, end quote from Bob Dylan. That's a unique way to look at it.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, they're never kind of finished.
EK said, yes, so much. I used to believe that if only I had a girlfriend, all my problems would be solved. Turned out that's not true at all. Ha, 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 ha. Now I believe that nobody's going to come and save us. We need to save ourselves. EK.
That's true.
Scoresby said, 100% children are purifying fire. He was commenting from undisciplined. When you have a little kid, you don't look for additional sources of suffering. That's the best training I can think of.
Yeah, of course, we had an excellent comment here describing what, like, what having a child is like, what kind of suffering it is, and
yeah, of course, we said from the moment a child is born, you are the only one responsible for them every day, every hour. There's no hour where you get to say, "I don't want to deal with this." What you want to do can always get trumped by what they need you to do. As you get older, it's like you have an exposed nerve walking around in the world out of your control, but still connected to your being.
Yeah, that was nice.
Really deep.
Yeah.
Yeah, stackers are, look, they're evolving into deeper conversations.
Deep souls. Yeah, EK links to a Jimmy Song post that he wrote on suffering, like an essay a little over 2 years ago now.
What did Jimmy say? Suffering is a stark reality, a force that dwells in the deepest recesses of our souls. Its presence can be unbearable, making us with emotional scars, easily healed.
He's just saying to embrace suffering. It's like fundamental to being a human. Don't try to, like, in many ways you can kind of see it as consistent with the other things Jimmy talks about, which is where, you know, fiat is maybe helping people, like, numb themselves to suffering, or they're, you know, these convenient things that are actually damaging them in the long run. And a lot of it is avoidance of suffering.
Looks like Austin, you have anything on
suffering?
The right real suffering?
Oh, what's the point of a heart if it doesn't break?
Oh, wow. Look at this guy. Song lyric. What's the point of a heart if it doesn't break?
I was wondering if y'all are going to talk about a story that I just saw on Meta, Stack Harder.
We probably aren't going to talk about that one.
Okay, that's cool.
I mean, we can talk
I'll bring, about it. No, it's okay. I'll bring my spicy takes to Noster.
Okay.
Why? What? Now I'm curious. What was it?
It was about...
It was just about, you know, Stacker News, how people see Stacker News, sort of.
Yeah, yeah.
Or is it
Bitcoin influencers, I
Why
guess.
Don't the known Bitcoiners shill us and more?
Yeah, yeah, there it is. Fifth one down?
Fourth one?
What's the quickest way?
It's right above Stacker Saloon.
Yeah, yeah.
Right above Stacker Saloon. Oh, yeah, here it goes.
Why you commented on this one? I'm sorry, I'm not trying to.
No, it's cool. It's just this one is like
literally just reading. This
is like drama to me. I just don't do the. I don't do. I can't answer in the meta. I just don't like it to be front.
Do you want us not talk about this right now?
I mean, I don't.
Okay. All right. So basically, it's why don't the known Bitcoiners show SN more? This is from Stack Harder. He said, "It seems like Noster gets all the love, and while it's fine and all, I would think more of the usual suspects in the Bitcoin space." The podcasters and alike would least mention Stacker News a bit more, as it's, in my opinion, still a unique thing in the Bitcoin space, and there are zaps too. Maybe most people just aren't into the format of a forum. Then again, whenever you look at the Ask Noster hashtag, it's just plebs talking to the void, not getting much of an answer when they could be on Ask Stacker News and getting their questions answered while doing some passive milking at the same time. Austin, I go to you, Austin. What is your read on that?
Well, I thought EK had an interesting comment. He was kind of talking about the perspective of it, which I think is, you know, it's like, so Stacker News centralized is bad, Noster decentralized is good. And it's kind of this simple surface level way that you can look at it. And I think that, like, a lot of people have looked at it like that. And it's just interesting for me. I've had a lot of conversations with people kind of on the ground about Stacker News and Noster. And I've heard a lot of people that just have completely wrong understanding and opinions about Stacker News. But then also the lack of understanding of, like, that Stacker News basically dog fooded Zaps. And in my opinion, still has a better Zap algorithm than Noster even can. But it just goes into, like, all of these. Well, it's kind of two different approaches, right? It's like Stacker News is like a centralized attempt to go build out a distributed social media. And you're in the early stages of that where it's still very centralized. And then Noster is sort of another attempt at that. And they just have different optics.
I think that is true. I think this is how people view it. I don't think I need to really say more. I just wonder where people get, I think the where people get these views from and how and when they have the misconceptions, why they have the misconceptions are kind of interesting to me. But I do think it's probably this simple. Like this is at least at, if you reduce it down to it, it's probably something like this. And then for some reason, our flaws are very great, and other and the other other systems, their flaws are ignored and
what do you think,
neglected.
What do you think, Austin? What do you think it is?
For me, there's a lesson to be learned about perspective. Because as a builder, you spend so much time. I spend a lot of time thinking about trade-offs and thinking about, like, you know, I want to have the perfect balance of, you know, user control, but also good user experience and stuff like. And so you live in these trade-offs, trying to make the perfect trade-off. But at the end of the day, the interpretations of that will far, far outweigh the technical realities. And it's really funny how those interpretations can far outrun the technical realities in certain areas, like in Noster, in my opinion, more towards the positive side, right? Or early on with Lightning.
So what? So why do you think that happens in Noster? Do you think it's because the aspects of Noster are more conducive to them running away into positive fantasy? Or do you think that there is something maybe putting perpetuating the positive fantasy? Could there be incentives at play?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely both. It's like a really, really strong narrative that has weight behind it. That's hard to pick apart that narrative.
And the
narrative
is the weight?
Like, say what?
The weight. I mean, this is mostly where I get kind of. You basically have tens of millions of dollars coming from Jack Dorsey on Noster, yeah. So that's the weight, and so that's the wind in the sails of any narrative, is people trying to get that money, and people trying to appease that money, and so that's mostly what I kind of see, like a non here posted. Follow the money.
Totally. But I think what is the money produced? And you're kind of saying it's produced this incentive and this sort of race into the Noster, you know, manifest destiny. And then also that money has produced really polished experiences on top of what is actually not a polished protocol. And so these are like these catch-22s that make it to where on the surface, this looks great. Peel back the surface. Oh, wait, that's kind of funny. Peel back another layer. Oh, wait, what is this beneath the floorboards? And that's a feeling I have about it. And there's a lot of things like that. It's just like the delta between the reality and the narrative is where like things get so out of hand, I think. And it's not even that, like, Stacker News has such a negative delta of, like, how people think about it and talk about it versus its reality. It's just more of how it gets compared to the delta of Noster.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is just totally unreasonable narrative to compete against.
Yeah. I think it's fine. I think, I mean, my biggest takeaway, despite some of the thoughts I have about the mechanics of it, which are just mostly interesting, is that we just need to do a better job of crafting our own narrative and maybe work taking a different path than the narratives of other people in the space or the people, I would call them gatekeepers of narratives in Bitcoin. And that's just, I think, what we'll have to do. We just have to work harder. I didn't want to talk about this at all.
Totally. Well,
I have stuff I can't say publicly about this, but
no, I get that. I didn't want to bring it all in, but like my big takeaway is narrative weaving as well. It's just that this is whatever you think about it. This is a powerful force and it's in the arena and
you can't ignore it.
It will work against you. It is just a reality to reconcile with.
Yeah.
And moving beyond Noster, this is what shitcoiners are great at. This is what Ethereum's been great at. So I think we need to look at this reality and work and understand that. It and yeah. reconcile with it and not just be like, oh, this is not fair. There's influencers and it's easy to be like that.
I agree with you. I think that is, you don't want to be the whiny bitch. Is yeah. Like that, which, is, how this can end up a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But, anyway, I think the stuff that the sad part is, I think a lot of stuff that's going on in us is really cool. And I hope it succeeds. So,
yeah. But,
and I hope people keep shilling it. I think it's good for Bitcoin. It's good for the ecosystem. And Stacker News just needs to do a better job of telling its own story.
Yeah, I think there's obvious money being flowed into Noster. And so that definitely is going to make a big difference. I actually remember when, like, even when Super was talking about Noster, and like, I didn't pay attention to it. It wasn't until like Domus came out, then I started writing about it on Thriller and talking about it. And then I don't think it wasn't until like the plebs actually adopted it that some others started looking at it and taking it more seriously. So that's always been my thing. I'm just always going to optimize for what the plebs think are cool and where that signal's coming from, because usually they see things before everybody else. So I think right now all the plebs are on Snacker News. There's a couple people that I follow on Noster for some stuff, but I get way more interaction on Stacker News, and I love Stacker News. But
yeah, and for context, I mean, I've worked on Noster for hundreds of hours. Keon has worked on Noster for hundreds of hours. Carr has written about Noster and been on, like, this isn't just critiques.
Yeah, I don't even think,
and that's important.
Yeah, I don't think we're really critiquing, and I don't really see it as critiquing. I mean, I'm mostly talking to like. I do think the disparity that you're describing is the best way to put it, between the maybe narrative and reality. And, you know, we spent a year not literally, like, I was just talking about growth today with Kevin, who used to work on growth at Stacker News. And I was basically describing what we'd done on growth the last year. It's like, we've done literally nothing. We don't post on Twitter. Yep. We don't post on Noster. We do AMAs. And that was like a development 6 months then. So we've been so focused on non-custodial wallet experiences in the context of an app like this that was really fucking hard for a year that we haven't done any of the narrative stuff. And so we're kind of just really behind on that, the like sort of the kind of sales propaganda angle, which I don't like to think of it as propaganda, but when there's a big gap, it tends to show up that way. But
do you think that this is an important, because I think about this, do you think this is an important role, really, even just in startups and Bitcoin startups, that like we need, I mean, what would you call it? Meme lords, narrative weavers, growth marketers, I guess would be the official term.
Yeah, you definitely do need, people who can set a tone for people. But there's a line you don't want to cross where you're lying to people, where you're like overpromising, they show up and the reality isn't there. That's something that I feel like Bitcoin never really did. And that's, I think, one of Bitcoin's strengths is, if anything, the narrative is negative. And then you show up to Bitcoin and you kind of get it. And then it exceeds the narrative in so many ways.
Under promise and over deliver.
Yeah. But there's there's a benefit to doing either, I guess. I obviously like the under-promising, but I do, you know, I think you maybe need both, because some people are reached by the under-promising, some people are only reached by the over-promising. Mm. But I think it's a good thing to think about, especially as someone who's building something. You really want a handle on how stories are getting in people's minds, so that you can put your product in the story of their mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also think, too, like... I think what Keon said, you could get better at a lot of other things, but I think at the end of the day, like, everybody's using Stacker News, even the ones that aren't chilling it, let's be honest. So, you know, they might come in as an Anon or some other name, but trust me, they're reading it, they're listening to it, they're listening to this podcast right now. So I think at the end of the day, you just got to realize that people might not be shilling it or might not be talking about it, but they are paying attention to it and they are listening to it, and it's getting back to them. So I think when you have that frame, you'll just, like what I do now, I don't even pay attention to that stuff. Now I just go and build what I want to build for the people that I want to build it for. And then everything else is just noise. And so that's all I'm trying to do is just like, what's the vision that I want for Plub Lab? And then how do I execute on that vision? And then how do I make sure that that vision aligns with the builders that are coming through Plub Lab? And like, that's it. And like, whether people pay attention to it or not, doesn't matter. It literally is, am I executing for the users, the clients, the people that we work with, you guys, stuff like that. And I think when you just keep it wholesome like that and really simple, you don't have to worry about the noise, because eventually the noise will come to you and they'll want to broker a deal, or they want to talk to you because you've been killing it. And that's just the truth.
Well, yeah, producing noise isn't free. And so you eventually run out of noise. And you know, whatever survived the period where the noise was produced is the signal, and that'll persist.
Because at the end of the day, I mean, they're going to say, who's the smartest guy who understands web of trust in the room, right? Or who understands?
There are really smart people I know that do.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. They're going to come and ask these questions, and you just want to be professional about it. And I think that's the approach you should always take, is just lean on the professional side. And, you know, the competitive stuff, I mean, all that's going to go away in like 2 or 3 years anyway. Like, dude, everybody was on Stacker News 2 or 3 years ago. Then Nostra came out. In 2 to 3 years, there'll be something new that everybody will move over into. It's all cyclical. Like, I don't foresee it. Like, it's ever evolving. So I think over time, this is the way it is right now. And it's just a season. It'll go away, and then something new will come. And staying alive is more important than anything else.
Yeah. I want to share, you reminded me, kind of an anecdote, a story I have from, I'll just say, a Bitcoin developer that I talked to in El Salvador. He is someone that previously had a very popular, well-recognized open source Bitcoin project that everyone was talking about. It was like mainstream Bitcoin narrative, fire news. And, you know, built it up and took a break from a little while and now has come back. And in many ways built something that is better, more impressive. And he is getting zero engagement. He's talking about, like, I used to have hundreds of thousands of, like, you know, points of engagement when I would make a release. And I just launched a release that took me like 6 months to build. And I got like 2 likes and no one noticed it. And so that's an interesting perspective of someone that like kind of came out of the gate and got a huge ton of attention. But then seeing that, well, actually, right, you can make so much noise for a long time, like you were saying. But if there's no real weight behind it, or if it's just being driven by, I don't know, some narrative wave that's outside of your control.
A coincidence of some kind.
Or a coincidence, or just right timing. It really is. And that can be devastating. That's almost more devastating than just toiling in the obscurity for a long time.
I don't think so. And I suspect I know the product that you're talking about. I think I would guess it's mostly a branding thing. If it's the right product. I remember the prior product's branding was like cool. And the current one is stodgy as fuck.
We'll talk about it afterwards. And I'd probably agree with you.
That's the main difference that I see. Mm-hmm. I think he's talking to the tech and how tired the tech is. And I get it. They've made a number of advances, I think, but
I said this on the podcast, or I say this in the lab too. It's like during a bull run, the loudest person in the room wins. That's all it is. You just got to be louder than everybody else, especially during a bull run. In a bear market, it's just about building. Like, that's all it is, and staying alive. In a bull run, be the loudest person. Do something crazy. Like
top builder?
Yes. Do something crazy like top builder.
Be a top.
Like, go in the middle of 6th Street and yell about Stacker News like crazy. Like, the end of the world is coming. Stacker News. I go here to read all
that's
about
a good
it.
Narrative.
But I'm saying in a bull run, this is how it works. And I think it's just like, I just remember from last time, like, this is the playbook that we ran, is just be the loudest person, stand out, do something stupid, do something crazy. Obviously, don't go to jail. I mean, get a cease and desist every once in a while, but still, like, this is how the games are won, especially in a bull run. But that's not advice.
Not legal or financial advice or Bitcoin advice.
Anyways, good thing.
I
guess good thing you brought this to our attention. I didn't even see it, but then I read down. I was like, oh, I did comment.
You commented on it today.
Yeah. Hey, people want the drama, you know?
It's just a lot of drama. I mean, it's like so much.
Dude, I don't even care about the drama at this point. They never send it through email, so I never see it. So maybe I'll get an email and just be like all the drama. Yeah, but no one wants to put that in a hard.
This stuff is interesting to think about, though. But I think it is important to bring up for people who are building.
It's just like people to throw you off your game. That's all it is. It's like you're going down the highway 100 miles per hour. And it's just like these little things are just like, oh, get off your lane. Like you're going too fast. Like, nah, get out of here. I'm focused on this. Let me focus on this. And Keon, you're focused on this. Just keep focusing on this. Just you're doing it. You're already doing it. Just stay alive. That's it. That's the game.
Wow. Yeah, you're kind of right, Carr. It's like a framing thing. Like I've had someone ask me the question before, like, do you feel bad that this other person is doing this thing?
Good for them.
Like basically what you're doing. And I'm like, well, I mean, when you put it like that, like, I don't know. I feel like I probably should feel bad.
Intro me to him. I would love to talk to that guy. How are you doing it better than I am?
Why did you ask me
Cool.
That?
Will you tell me how you're doing it better than I am? Great. Will you actually? Okay. So you do it that way. Cool. I'm going to go do that too. So
Well, no, this is a regular founder struggle. I've been following YC for a long time, and they talk about this a lot. You just never think about your competitors. There's no point in it.
Mm-hmm. If the market's big enough for everybody.
If you're getting customers and they value it and you're growing or whatever, then there's no reason to pay attention to them, especially if most of what they're doing is derivative. Because if most of what they're doing is derivative, then they're not going to come up with their own ideas. Mm-hmm. And that's like another aspect of it.
There's not a lot of talented. I'll tell you right now, there's not a lot of talented, innovative ideas in Bitcoin. Those are few and far between. And every once in a while, somebody will come out with a really innovative, talented idea. And then everybody will run to it. It's like the NFL. It's a copycat league. So you can't take offense to that. You just got to accept that.
It's human nature, and it's good that Bitcoin does this.
And honestly, lots of it's good for the user at the end of the day. They get the option. I mean, I use Primal every day. I use Stacker News every day. These are good things to
have in
my life.
I'm on Noster, too.
I don't use Domus anymore, unfortunately.
I use Domus.
It's just Primal's that much more better now. But, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's great. You don't need to shill me. Bitcoiners, it's okay. We'll figure out our own.
Feel free to show Carr. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, you can show me.
Show pleb devs.
Show pleb devs.
We'll show
plebdevs.com.
Plebdevs.com. Go there, subscribe.
And I shall stack
this segment.
Yeah.
This segment pleb brought devs to you by pleb
stack
devs.
News on there.
Where you can learn how to build on Bitcoin and become a dev. That's right. You too can be him sitting at that chair.
Oh.
Come find him in Austin. His name is Austin. A lot of great builders named Austin in Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah. And there's more coming. Coming. Yeah.
Cool.
There's a Bitcoiner born every day in Austin. I don't know if you knew that.
The next top story is your master's degree useless? This is from The Economist. What's that name? Dillian Lala Pond?
I call him Den, but yeah.
Yeah, Den 46 comments. 700 cents. Number three, top story of the week.
Something like that. Yeah. So this is... a story from The Economist about the uselessness of getting a master's degree. And it just kind of cites all the research on it. Basically, if you're going after a master's degree for financial gain, especially if it's not in like a more engineering science field, you're likely not going to see a return on your investment. You might actually get a negative investment return. A little less true of women, though, actually, in the data.
So what are you saying? Like only women who have master's degrees get hired?
Like if you look at this chart here, the women are the pink. And so, okay. Yeah, when they get this is a comparison relative to a bachelor's degree. And so if you people who get advanced degrees in languages, men, they have a 30%. They make 30% less than someone who got a bachelor's degree in languages. And then women, they make about 10% less. And I think it's because there's like confounders here where women who get advanced degrees usually put in more hours, usually are maybe starting families a little later is like part of what's showing up in this data.
What's the technology one showing right there? What's that one, Keon?
I would guess that's probably...
It's a big difference.
I would guess that might be engineering generally.
Oh, this is in Britain, it looks like.
Yeah, they said the data is a lot better in the UK, although the data, I mean, it's roughly similar in the United States. I mean, the most people's advice for going to college has always been like, study what you love, do it because you want to do it. And I think this stuff, it really matters though when you're thinking about the finance, when you're only pursuing a degree for financial reasons. Like, I wouldn't mind getting a master's degree in math or maybe another degree in computer science. I would, regardless of the return, I would just love to learn that much more. But if you don't want to learn it, you're just doing it to get money, clearly it's not paying off. And I think it's just, part of it is it's become really, the job market has been saturated with people with advanced degrees already.
There's a part of me that wants to go back and get like a business degree of a sort. Because I feel like it could shortcut a lot of things for me.
Yeah, I mean, it could. But then on the other hand, there's probably no better business school than starting one.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think, Pleb Dev?
Yeah, I mean, I only went to college for 2 months. And
look how you turned out.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of... Well, and the thing is, I was like already... deranged about the school system. I had like dropped out of high school and I came back around, got my GED and was like, I'm going to go to college to learn computer science because I want to learn how to build on Bitcoin and I'm going to need to know the foundations of computer science. This is the way. And I just like that narrative got destroyed in like one semester. It took like one semester of college for me to realize like, okay, this is a lie. These people are trying to distract me. I was actually on my own the whole way along. And the idea that these people would help me work in Bitcoin was just like a narrative that I believed. But that's not true about everything, right? It's just like engineering and tech. But in general, because the field is flooded with advanced degrees, I think the way to compete is to be different mm-hmm. and stand out amongst those people. And like extreme people get extreme results, you know? Yeah. Try and like go break some big software in the world. Go hack some software. I don't know, make something crazy that no one else does. Or actually, best thing you can do, go make something and then get one user at least.
Yeah.
And that's a huge thing to stand out on like applications is like, I made something and I got users. And so there's still those ways to stand out and there, a lot of them aren't credentialed. So yeah, non-credentialed ways to stand out. I think that's kind of the signal.
Good stuff. Looks absolutely. Like Real Bitcoin Dog said, my master's counted as 2 years of experience at my fiat job to get me promoted faster. Yes, I know, very fiat, but I think worth the ROI. What do you think about that?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, some of these, they have like these co-op degrees, oftentimes in outside of the United States, where you like get a master's degree and half of it is working. I don't really get it. It's kind of.
I think this day and age, you definitely need more people learning faster. And I think you just have to have. I think especially it's probably was always true. I just never noticed it when I was younger. But definitely feel at this point, like if you're a young kid, either if you're going to school or not, like you need to have a love of learning, especially these days, because the world is moving really fast. But.
Yeah, and you'll move faster outside of school. Just think how much school slows you down. It's like if you actually figure out something good to do, like, oh, I need to go build, you know, I don't know. If you want to be an accountant or a business person, like what's the thing that you would do to stand out and get you that next level? If you're in school, that's just going to be a big waste of time. But if you can spend all your time.
I think if you go to and Jim has talked about this. I think if you go to like a prestigious school, that could really shorten your track as far as like getting to where you want to be. So there's something to be said about like getting into that network and culture and then leveraging that for what you want to do in life. So
it's not just that. I mean, and the teacher is a paid mentor. So like most people step out of school, away from school, and they don't have a mentor at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that, I think that's the real thing that you miss not being in school. I think there's also like you learn things that you would not choose to learn in school, but are very helpful mm-hmm. about that around you. Obviously there are things you absolutely don't want to learn. And you know that in advance, but you still get taught them in school in some cases, if you don't have much control, but it varies a lot. I think you entered school at a different time than I did. And from what I've heard, it was maybe not as good.
Oh, yeah. I'm like the worst person to ask. Yeah, I'm completely and totally biased.
I love school. I love school.
Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
So I agree with what you guys were saying. I was just listening to the Meat Mafia podcast, and those guys are pretty high signal, in my opinion. They're kind of, they're orange pilled, but they were at the
big. Yeah, shout out
Brett Ender and Harry. Yeah. I don't know
Harry. Yeah, I know Harry.
But Brett was saying that he went to a prestigious business school, and pretty much like 99% of his peers all went into corporate America, and it just teaches you how to be a good cog. So, yeah. He learned by doing same thing you were saying. I pretty much agree with this. I think everyone should check out the School Sucks podcast because they pretty much get into the history of school and why it's so fucked up. Those guys are Free Staters, and they talk about how schooling is basically invented by the Prussians who later became the Nazis and taught people how to be good, basically good slaves, good soldiers, run into gunfire and be good workers. So I think pretty much everything you guys have been saying is on point, but there's like historical reasons. That said, I agree with Keon. Like, it's good to get breath and just go outside your comfort zone and discover different stuff. That's kind of the Steve Jobs side of the coin, where it's like you don't know what you're going to be interested in or what's going to come into play later. Yeah.
Calligraphy.
He took a calligraphy class that totally changed his mindset. And I've had right similar girl. Experiences with, like, I studied Chinese in college. That has nothing to do with what I do now, but I now do stuff with language models and that relates. And then I studied like matrix algebra, which I never thought I'd need. And then I ended up needing it. So,
yeah. Yeah. To Austin's point, you can learn that on your outside of school. You can be really good at self-educating. Some people just do so much better in that context and they can introduce the randomness and the breadth. Yeah. Austin himself is a great example of that. Like I didn't really enjoy going to class very much, but I did love being told this is useful to know and then going and learning it. So I think it varies, but you know, kind of interesting view.
If you could go back now, would you go back to school if you could and like do it all over again? What would you have studied for? Would you do the same thing? Would you study the same thing?
I like kind of what I'm doing. So I mean, if it's like this day and age.
No, not this day and age. If you could go back to
the exact same time.
Exact same time, would you have studied the exact same thing?
Yeah, I think I liked my education a lot. I liked the result of it, both financially and otherwise.
Austin? I wouldn't have changed a thing. The only mistake I ever made is like when I was 12 and 13, I was curious about programming and I thought I was too stupid. Because everyone told me I was stupid and I was stupid. So it's like I could have been totally cracked right now.
Yeah.
Instead of Club Dev, could have been like 10X Dev.
Crack Dev.
Oh, wait. Ted's going to come in.
As a master's educated person here.
Wow. Take my hat off just out of respect.
Wait, engineering physics?
Yeah. I would go back and I wouldn't do any of that again. Not even the question. Probably what I would do is I would still try really, I'll try harder when I was younger to get into Ivies, and then I would try to get in because you get the sort of selection threshold, which does help.
Certification.
So Ted was playing the game. You're playing the game, Ted.
Then I would go to campus, and I might even like live on campus for the first year, but just not go to any classes or like
wow.
pay for any classes.
Be a super social dude.
Yeah, don't take anything. Don't pay because you don't want to pay the admission. You just want to, like, get... Cause it's such, like, a good environment, you know, of having all those people around and just leech, basically.
If you go to an Ivy, like, there's a total, like, caste system of Ivies. People don't talk about this, but, like, Harvard and Princeton and, like, Yale, like, you're not going to be able to do what you just said. At Brown, you can definitely do what you just said. Like, Cornell, if you go to the ag school, you could probably do what you just said and just network your ass off, but... Or get somebody else to do your work. I don't know how that would work.
Good stuff, guys. This is all great stuff.
All right. Stackers. So you have many paths in life.
Also, we'll mention children. So Ted, you just heard that voice. If you're interested, next week he's going to be doing co-hosting with me for Stacker News Live. So if you liked what he said right there, be on the lookout for that podcast next week on Stacker News Live because Coob. What's going on? Are you calling it vacation or staycation? What are you calling it?
I think I just call it a vacation. It's sort of like a working vacation, a research vacation. Yeah.
So there you go. You'll see Ted next week.
Are you? What are you researching? Is that public?
It's just I have like a stack of books that I want to read.
Oh,
that,
so pretty open.
Open ended, yeah. That's
cool.
Oh, is that? Oh, does he really? Oh, I didn't know that. Maybe I absorbed that at some point. But that's my goal, is just to read a bunch of books that nonstop. That's right. He has a time machine and he studied me.
The second top story of the week is the world's most productive intellectual. It looks like we're staying in this path this week. Books and articles territory from another one from Den. 27 commas, 4,943 sats. Keon, back to back.
What's this? Yeah. So this is another one from Den, or Joaquin Book is their actual name. And you can see here this thing they wrote. But this is about a Czech physicist who he declares as the world's most interesting intellectual, I think. I don't have the story up, so I can't really see the title. Most productive intellectual. He writes like a book every year. Den has read several of his, I guess he lists the books that he owns here, but he was, I guess, a physicist who I think the story is that he like didn't join the Communist Party in a time when it was popular in Czechoslovakia. And then I think eventually immigrated to Canada, studied geography, then got a PhD in geography, and then I think became a professor, and now he's just an extremely productive, interesting intellectual who writes a lot of books, and from Den's perspective, isn't partisan, and ends up with, you know, as a moderate does at more often, almost a perspective that anyone from any one political persuasion can agree with, because it's based more squarely on reasoning. Anyway, that's it. The dude's name, I have it here, is Vaclav Smil. Vaclav Smil, How to Feed the World. He writes about a lot of these like global warming type stuff, population, food. I think for a time he was a vegan, Den mentions.
Another Canadian. Interesting.
Well, actually, he's, you know, Czech, but moved to Canada.
Cool.
Yeah.
Who do you all think is the most productive intellectual, or who's someone that comes to your mind? Someone that...
Productive intellectual, shoot.
What does that even mean? Like, how do you measure that?
That's kind of interesting, because it's like, I feel like it's a little bit of an oxymoron, because an intellectual in a lot of ways is someone that's just pondering, but someone that's productive is someone that's shipping. So it's like, if you can intellectually ship a lot, it's like, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Well, I think, I think what he's saying about, as far as his productivity, because Den is a writer, is that he's producing a lot of writing. And so he's pondering in a consumable way rather than in his own mind. So
I like the fact that he's not a communist. So that's good.
Yeah. Productive writers that I,
I don't know.
That's hard. I'm probably not an avid enough reader to have a good.
Yeah. What do you think it is, Austin?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's really hard to say, because someone that comes to mind for me is Jordan Peterson, not because he's out there shipping so much work, but because he spent a career building up a lattice work of like ideas that are really deep and take people years to understand. Mm-hmm. And he's just been delivering those ideas to market the last 10 years with huge demand constantly. And so that feels like highly productive intellectualism, but it's the kind that like he had a whole career of probably not shipping very much.
Right.
Where that, in fact, he talks about spending like 10 or 12 years writing his first book, Maps of Meaning. Yeah. So I think there's kind of something there about slow productivity that, you know, it's time comes.
Yeah. Stewing, educating yourself.
Stewing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can respect that. That's pretty cool. Nice. We're going to jump into the number one top story of the week on Stacker News Live. Here we go. The number one story: how Big Brother can attack Bitcoin without spending a dime. Wow. This is the number one story this week. Bitcoin territory, February 11th, from Arshbot. 12 comments, 6,137 sats. Keon, what the heck is this?
Yeah, this was a great post. I think it's written by, I think his name is Goshi. Is that the right? Oh, no. Harsha. I combined the name. Harsha Goli. By Arshbot is the NIM on Stacker News, but they're the one that wrote this, and they just reshared it on Stacker News. But basically, they aggregate all the relevant legal stuff that's going on at the state level in the United States as it relates to Bitcoin right now. So they go over the Samurai case. They go over and like how that's relevant maybe to people building in the space. They go over
what's Magnolia?
The original, they're building on Taproot assets. So he formerly worked at Lightning Labs. I think before that was at Fold doing Lightning stuff. But they are, I think, one of the first people building on Taproot assets. So he's very, obviously very interested in the legal landscape here. But he goes over the Ethereum mixer. What was it called? Tornado Cash. United States versus Storm. And basically how these cases, more or less depending on how they go, or if you know the existing cases already do, they kind of nullify the our like operating understanding of the regulatory landscape in the United States, because it started off with if you're non-custodial, you're safe from being a money transmitter. If you're not doing currency exchange, you're safe from being a money transmitter. And then with these cases, it's kind of saying simply if you author Bitcoin software, even if you have no role in the person spending the money or hosting it for them or anything, you are a money transmitter is what some of these cases would result in. So basically, the picture he's painting is that we are headed down a slope of regulation to the point where Bitcoin cannot be really used except for in a regulated KYC AML way. And so unless we fight somewhat of a legal battle, we get active legally, we're going to end up in a place where Bitcoin is not usable. And it, you know, the kind of attack surface right now is companies in Bitcoin, because they're probably the most centralized entity. After that, it's developers, people who are, because there are fewer of them than the people that are consuming them. So they go after developers, the people who are publishing the open source software that people are using. And then, but probably by the time they just kind of make sure anyone running any kind of Bitcoin related anything is like legally in a straitjacket, by that point that they've already won. So he's kind of encouraging people to maybe take, admit the realities here and aim to do something about it. Cause it's no longer okay to just be non-custodial. It's now, this is like, that's just where the line of scrimmage is. That's where the war is currently. And it could move. And
do you have a take on it, Austin, or do you want me to go first?
You go first.
Yeah, so I see a lot of problems with this piece. I'm not sure. Was it just this one person that made this?
Yes, it is.
This is Harsha, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. He's awesome. Yeah.
I don't understand what he means here. Is it a he or a she?
He.
So he says, I'm a Lightning contributor. Most of my Bitcoin work is Lightning related or adjacent, but Lightning nodes are servers. The servers are centralized. Regulators can't target them. Further on-chain policy can effectively neuter Lightning. Having dirty funds and want to wash them with onion routing. In a Lightning regulated world, no exchange will want to accept them or direct channel. Okay. So is he saying that we're moving to this Lightning regulated world, or is he saying this is the world that we currently live in right now?
It's a hypothetical. He's asking you to entertain the idea that regulators eventually come for Lightning, and they are now regulating Lightning, and this already happens to some degree.
But we talked about this last week with the whole Taproot Tether coin, and how whether, you know, us plebs upgrading our LND nodes, does that make us a money transmitter now because there's tether being transferred between our nodes?
I wouldn't say that's not related. So let's ignore the Taproot asset part. He's just talking about if you are helping people move money, even if it's non-custodial, but some of these cases right now are saying that you are a money transmitter. And then additionally, that we have this idea of kind of OFAC sanctioned UTXOs. And so you already can't send money from those to an exchange. They'll already reject it or send out from an exchange to those addresses. That's kind of why those OFAC sanction lists exist. If you open a Lightning channel now with one of those OFAC sanctioned UTXOs and you try to open it with an exchange, they'll probably won't accept that channel open either. And then we're at a different level now already, where I already know that some of the biggest Bitcoin node operators and entities in Bitcoin have literal legal contracts with their channel partners, like, you know, U.S. legal contracts with them. And they're only opening channels to the people with those legal contracts.
So you're saying I can't pay you a Lightning invoice for dinner or something because we will both need a KYC, non-custodial wallets. Is that what you're saying?
No.
I'm trying to understand what he's saying. Like, he's saying that world doesn't exist right now, or is that what
it doesn't exist right now? He's just saying that this is kind of the way you can imagine it going. Is that?
Oh, so he's painting a future where they win.
Yes, he's trying, and to some extent, some of this is already true. And he kind of lays out
which parts, though.
The legal parts he lays out. He has it's pretty simple. He has like a list of things that we assumed given a ruling. I think that was like in 2016 or 2015 about from FinCEN about the nature of money transmission and people who need to be subject to AML stuff. And then he says, well, this case is being prosecuted right now, and basically it crosses off all those assumptions that we had. And then you have another one, and he crosses off even more, and you're kind of left with, you have to write your own Bitcoin software from scratch to use to, huh? Yeah, I don't really know what I mean, there are obviously mitigations to some degree of this, and that's...
To me, it's so weird because, like, it's like the internet. Like, how are you going to stop the internet, like, from being the internet? Then that's kind of how I see Bitcoin. It's like, how are you going to stop Bitcoin from just being Bitcoin? You can't. You can try, but people are still going to do what they do, and I don't understand.
I think the dynamics aren't the same. For one, the internet the internet, I think, took the governments by surprise, and they didn't realize how fast to grow and everything. I think they're much more aware of Bitcoin coming. Obviously, they're talking about it a lot and stuff. The other thing is that Bitcoin is more a threat to them than anything else, because internet maybe challenged their stranglehold on information. Bitcoin challenges their stranglehold on world dominant, on like money, world reserve currency, which is super important to them.
I don't think it does, though. That doesn't stop from people working together, making the world a better place. Like, this is what governments are supposed to be doing. Like, as far as, like, if they're trying to launch totalitarianism, yes, it stops you from doing that. It stops it from being like a one world government. But like, as far as like what a government's supposed to be doing, no, it doesn't stop you from governing.
I'm not talking about the ideals of government. I'm talking about what the government
I'm talking about the ideals of government, because I think that we're assuming that this is a thing that's happening, and then we're assuming that the government that we have now, and that's the way it's always going to be. That's just the way where the slider eventually went to. And I think us as Bitcoiners all recognize that, and they recognize that it's because of the money and the inflation. So I think when you get it to that respect, it's like, this is not removing government from state. It's, if anything, it's removing just money from state. And I think that's the part that I don't think people are recognizing as a governing government is supposed to be doing what governments do and governing the entire population. But it's not supposed to be like you know, controlling where you go pray or controlling what you spend your money on. Like, do you understand what I'm trying to say?
I definitely don't. I mean, obviously don't disagree. I don't disagree with
yeah,
you.
Yeah. So that's where I kind of just like, am like, we lost the plot. Like somewhere along the way.
Well, Bitcoiners didn't lose the plot, but yes.
I know. I'm government saying government's stuff. Lost the plot. Yeah. So I don't think it's a total like us versus them mentality. It's like, no, this is where the future's going. Get on board with it. It's that simple. And I think the internet was the same way. They'll get on board with it. But I don't think it needs to happen where it's like us versus them. There is no us versus them. It's just us.
I think that's my
opinion.
I think that point is good. I just mostly was making a point of that. I think money is a bit different than the internet, and I think there are different things at play. The other aspect I was going to mention is that Bitcoin is a more stateful system than the internet is. And so it's going to always be less decentralized than the internet is, because it has this high state requirement. Like running a node requires having a big hard disk. And so I think, and there isn't a whole lot of financial incentive for running it. So it's likely to be more centralized. So it makes the attack surface, in some ways easier to breach. Austin, do you have any?
Yeah, I mean,
it's good.
We want a robust network. A robust network of nodes helps mitigate this, but it's very possible that the battle could come to the doorstep of the node runner, right? And in that scenario, it's just going to be very confusing, and I think it's going to go to the Supreme Court, and it's because it goes into these definitions of what is property. And this is literally what it came down to in the Tornado Cash case, because it was like, it's like, what is property and what is a payment, right? If you and me are communicating over Lightning and we make a quote-unquote payment, what's really, really happening under the surface is not actually quite exactly a payment. It's like, and it's not even necessarily a state transfer. It's like, you are giving me an unlocking code and we are updating some virtual state. It's like, well, there's an underlying asset, I guess, that is Bitcoin, and that Bitcoin UTXO is sitting on someone's node, but it's not actually transferring, right? Mm-hmm. Technically. But then we get in all of these very specific, kind of dumb technical arguments, and then really, really important philosophical arguments. From my understanding of the Tornado Cash case, though, it came down to, they basically said, like, the contract that Tornado Cash was, you know, running on their servers and helping facilitate, that contract was not actually property. So therefore, they were not actually transmitting money. And I think it came down to something like that, like the definition of property. So it's like, definitionally, what are we actually working with and passing around on Lightning? And so I think legally, that's where it's going to come down to. But pragmatically, I think what this piece is about is the fact that Lightning is hard. There's not great incentives to run nodes. To mitigate against attacks like these, we would want a large network of nodes. Mm-hmm. But to get a large network of nodes, we need big companies and good services to come trailblaze, and they are going to be the biggest targets, right? So maybe us plebs, we're not worried about these things or thinking about them, but as Keon mentioned, with like the contracts that these people are already doing, these bigger entities, they're already thinking about it, right?
Yep. LSPs. I mean, you could imagine, I mean, if they want to go after the Lightning network and its usability, just go after the LSPs and you'd probably neuter most of the usage.
Yeah.
On Bitcoin, on Lightning today.
And there's not big Anon presence in Lightning as far as like big liquidity, big operations.
Yep.
Like the biggest one I can last remember of is zero fee routing.
Yeah, I think that's it right here. I mean, this is kind of where the world is going right here. It says inside this Bitcoin policy thing, it says uphold American rights to transact freely and privately, protect the right to engage in peer-to-peer transactions without third-party intermediaries. This includes safeguarding the rights of self-custody Bitcoin to use and develop non-custodial applications and to run a node on the Bitcoin network. And they have a couple other recommendations, but I think this is what I'm talking about. This is where the world is going. And
I think the main thing Austin and I might be saying is that, and the author of this post might be saying, is that this isn't guaranteed in any time frame that is relevant to us. So we might live in 100 years of a regime that doesn't allow.
This seems like Bernstein versus US 2.0, right? Yeah. Like they're revisiting Are you familiar with that one?
I've heard the name.
Here, actually, let me pull it up with Jamie. What's the name of it?
Bernstein versus U.S. You spelled it wrong.
Bernstein Bears, like the Bernstein Bears.
Yeah. So
I used to be the Bernstein.
Bernstein versus U.S. I guess that's like the original cypherpunk one that I think.
I see what you're saying.
They were trying to make PGP and SHA illegal.
Oh right.
They were trying to make them export controls.
Yep.
And so I think the Ninth Circuit ruled that code is speech. So it comes back to, like, as you point out, code is speech. Asterisk, as long as you vote threaten our hegemony, you know,
like
code is speech, except for when money is speech. And then it's like,
yeah,
it's a pretty, it's round two of this fight. It sounds,
I think you're right.
I don't think it's like, it's not a fight. If it's to me, I just don't understand how they think they can fight something that is what you guys just described as code of speech. But,
Well, I think you gotta remember that they're people. They're people and they're activists. I mean, you can see what's going on now. Like, you have the Federalist types that are like, no, we're just going to go off of, like, what is in the Constitution. You have activist types that are, I think they're Marxist infiltrators. They're just like, no, we're just going to, like, kind of try to dance into whatever kind of world we want to build. And you guys can go fuck yourselves. Like, that's kind of their attitude in my eyes.
Interesting. Anyways, wow. I can see why this got to the number one thing. I didn't even read this.
It's a great post, and it looked like you really dove into the law.
Scoresby said, I'm not sure this is true. Social resistance is a pretty basic part of Bitcoin, yet governments are busy coming up with ways to circumvent this. If we all upgrade Bitcoin to some incredibly fungible e-cash level privacy, that's essentially the same as physical cash. What stops the government from requiring all the same things? It requires a physical cash. If you want to send your 100% fungible private coin to our exchange, you have to prove what you got.
Can I tell you two fun anecdotes?
Siggy said, great article, depressing as hell, but great.
Yeah, funny. Basically.
What did Darth Quinn? Darth Quinn says, is harsh because people still believe in authority. Never challenge. Wow. Somehow Darth me and Quinn. Darth are always on the same page. I'm not saying exactly that, but I'm saying somewhere in there, just not as fierce. Interesting. Cool stuff. I'm here for it, though.
Austin,
hey, we're going to be a part of this world changing. Austin, what were you going to say, Austin?
Yeah.
Oh, two fun anecdotes. I love getting in conversations about Lightning with people that have very different perspectives than me, and I have professionally a few times. And so I've talked to someone that was an independent tax auditor in crypto. We talked for over an hour about how you would audit Lightning. And I was trying to blue team, or, you know, like red team, blue team, figure out how could you audit Lightning according to how they do it as independent third-party auditors. And, well, it's not possible. And that made me really bullish. I've also had conversations with a number of regulators and some of the past companies. And one of my last companies, I explained how Lightning works to, like, our compliance officer. And she was terrified. She couldn't believe it. And we already had a basic Lightning feature at the time. So she was like, wait, so you don't know the money that's being transferred? You don't know where it's coming from? I'm like, yeah, that's the best part.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's, I guess, all that to say, like, it's very sticky. Almost no one is thinking about this except for us Bitcoiners. And I think it's a good thing to have this sort of adversarial game planning.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I think this is good conversation. And it's definitely worth talking about on Stacker News. I think that's all the top five stories this week. We're going to jump into Keon's top stories. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, this appears to be a solo blocked mine, but everyone was really confused about the origin of it. For one, the hash of the block, which identifies the block, ended with the word beef, which I think was just a coincidence, because it'd be really hard to get that much difficulty and also add beef to it. But I think it made people look twice at it and begin to wonder where it came from. They're using solo mining. I believe solo mining software, the CK pool, solo mining software, but they haven't identified themselves as a solo miner, and they actually have too many successes to actually be like running, you know, a BitAx or something. And so what most people have concluded, and you can, this kind of laid out like a mystery here, most people have concluded is that it's a secret mining pool and that there's like fairly significant hash rate behind this mining pool. And it might just be one miner, and it, and he's like, you know, it's kind of is a solo pool. I thought it was pretty awesome, and you could see the history of them mining. They went dark for a few years. I just thought it was a really fun, if you're like into look at like the anthropology of mining, it's a really fun post. You see this, Austin?
I didn't. This is interesting. I'm wondering, like, how can you tell what metadata do you look at to figure out what pool it's coming from? I know they have, Mempool has the new screen where you can compare like block templates, I think, to see who's using the same block template. So it's like, that's one way to see.
In the Coinbase transaction, I believe most of them put an op return that identifies the pool.
Okay.
And so in this case, they put
someone else's.
Yeah, they put like the the default pool of this solo mining ZK pool software. But I guess the author of that software came out and said that was not from his pool, and that someone else was running it independently, which is pretty cool. And so that's like just, you know, part more of the like mystery here. But there's like, you know, so it's like their secret hash sitting somewhere on the planet that this guy occasionally deploys, and it's kind of fun.
Another mystery.
Yeah, they identified it as unknown, which I wonder, it doesn't look like before they were identifying it as unknown, but then maybe they manually overwrote it. Or is this the picture you pulled up? Or did you click on, and you're on mempool.space right now?
Yeah, I clicked the blocking question.
Oh, okay, so they knew it was not actually a CK pool. Hmm. Or maybe they did that after the fact anyway. Because that was 4 days ago. They might have already, those guys are, Wiz is literally, you know, he's called Wiz maybe for a reason and was on it quick.
Cool. The next one that you had was the Duolingo handbook. What was this?
Yeah, so KR shared this Duolingo handbook. I love these tech company like handbooks they give out because they kind of try to.
Are they from Pittsburgh? Is that where they're based out of?
Yes, I believe the founder went to Carnegie Mellon and then went on to do Duolingo stuff. I think he was probably studying AI machine learning stuff. And then, you know, they do a lot of natural language processing and linguistic stuff, and probably got super interested in languages. And then,
oh, I love that. We're building a forever product.
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah, I mean, it shows in their product. I used their product years ago, but it was already great. The gamification and stuff was really thoughtful.
We're creating a 100-year brand. I love that. We're hiring exceptional people. Love that.
Yeah, I love these. Facebook has the Red Book, as it's called, which they haven't really published publicly, but you can get access to it.
Oh, look, every feature we ship must be intuitive, delightful, useful, and polished.
It's just a great thing to hand to employees to be like, this is the bar. This, you know, get above this bar, please. You know, kind of propaganda, but like in a good way.
Totally. Wow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So this is kind of reminds me of like a lookbook.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really into lookbooks, dude. It's a whole thing.
Yeah, like tone setting. It's a very similar thing to a lookbook.
Directors do it for different movies that they're going to go into production with.
Mm.
They create these like lookbooks, and it's such a great application. This kind of reminds me of that. Cool. You got anything, Austin?
Reminds me of Scout Handbook. We need a Scout Handbook for Bitcoin.
Ooh. Oh, what's a Scout Handbook?
You know, it's just like, it's kind of like this. It's like, oh, here's how to be a scout, but also here's how to tie a knot, and here's how to save yourself from drowning.
Oh, like the, yeah.
It's like a little bit of a mix of ethos and practicality.
What are those called? What's the full name? Not scouts.
Oh, Boy Scouts?
Boy Scouts. You called it Scouts because yeah, you're a man now. But.
You know.
I'm going to pull it up, Jamie. Scout handbook.
I went on one Boy Scout overnight, and my mom told me someone was going to molest me, and I couldn't.
You got a warning? Keep doing it. Jealous.
That's what my mom. She didn't. She really didn't like it, I don't think. She just told me that they were going to molest me if I stayed, which is, you know, terrible, but... My mom's effective, effective woman.
All right, I'll have to get that later.
Bye.
Later, Oliver. The next one you had was the Jameson Lopp AMA. This was a good AMA. It had a lot of people in it. 120 comments, 22,000 sats. Did he connect his wallet? Or
he did not connect his wallet.
Ooh.
Oh, we've talked about this in the lab already. Many of us learned for the first time that Jameson Lopp is anti-Lightning. He is not a Lightning believer. He is
probably because he read that other post.
Oh, the other post that's written from a Lightning dev is bullish on Lightning stuff. So I don't think that's his intent.
Yeah, I didn't know that. What is his perspective? Did he talk about it here?
Carr ended up tagging El Tor dev and wanted Jameson's Lopp's perspective on it. And he's like, I hope it doesn't rely on Lightning, is basically what he said.
Uh-huh.
And so I've never seen him talk about Lightning much at all. I know he has Lightning guides on his website where he links to external things, but he doesn't seem to be doing much with Lightning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had that debate with Jimmy Song about... it was sort of like the Bitcoin ossification debate.
Yeah.
And so he takes the side of the Bitcoin progressive.
Yeah.
I guess so. But it's kind of, for me, it's sort of interesting to have that Bitcoin progressive perspective, but then not believe in Lightning at the same time.
Well, I think it's actually consistent because what he's saying is Lightning is an effective means of scaling. So we need to be more progressive about layer one changes and layer one scaling.
Yeah. Okay.
I would guess that is actually his perspective. Is he just he probably believes that Lightning is infeasible for most people, even in the long run, which I don't agree with. You probably differ in that opinion. But I know a lot of, you know, Lightning devs, even protocol people who are like, no, this is just Lightning is for banks. It's not for plebs. That's kind of the perspective.
Yeah. Someone I really look up to, they told me, if you think that running a Lightning node is too hard, you're a pussy. And I really took that seriously.
Hell yeah.
Oh, man.
And so I think that's kind of a counterpoint. But
I mean, people are running Lightning nodes on their phone. I mean, they're light nodes and they're heavily dependent on.
Yeah, it's like, it's just, it's like, it's okay. If it is too hard, you're right. Yeah. There's an excuse for you. There's a perfectly good excuse. Question, it's too hard.
This question triggered somebody in the lab. Remember that?
Oh.
I won't say who it was, but it triggered them big time.
Oh, someone got triggered about Casa not doing KYC? I don't know who would get triggered at the lab about that. I guess someone maybe who uses Unchained. And KYC.
Overall, it was a great AMA.
I want to read this. Why does Casa support ETH?
He said he's running a business, not a church. That's what he said.
A business, not a church. Well, invest in cults. I don't know.
Anyways, it was an interesting AMA. I think you guys should have more of these types of people.
But, well, they're not exactly easy to get. I think this was
go get Adam back.
Yeah, this was
get all the people that have been around for a while.
What's the story of that whale, that like whale hunter, that famous story?
Moby Dick.
This is Moby. You know, this is like a Moby Dick. You kind of write a generational book about it.
It was good. It was a good AMA. He was answering questions for the stackers.
Thanks a lot.
Gotta respect that.
Yeah.
A lot of hard questions too.
Lop is one of my favorite
kept it real
Bitcoiners, even if I don't agree with them all the time.
Mm-hmm. The next one was mine. So I'm going to get into my story. So these are going to be fun. The first one is this. The man offers to buy city dump in last-ditch effort to recover $800 million in Bitcoin. So this guy actually has, there's a documentary about him, Keon. If you go on YouTube and you type in Basically, his girlfriend threw his laptop away that had all this Bitcoin on it. I don't know if she donated, but it got ended up in the trash for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember this story like a while back. So I guess it finally happened. But in January, Hal lost a court battle with Newport City Council in Wales, which many expected would be his last shot at excavating the dump. But soon after, the Newport Council revealed that it would be closing the landfill. So it obviously said, hey, right? At that point, where is it at here? Hal told the Times that he envisions cleaning up the site, turning it into a park. So basically, he wants to buy the landfill, not only to look for that laptop, but to, you know, maybe mine some Bitcoin probably too. Who knows? Mm-hmm. What do you think about this story? And do you think he'll actually find the laptop?
No, I don't think he will. But I hope he keeps trying because it's fun.
Would you buy a landfill?
I mean, if he must be really certain, but you have to be worried that he's like, you know, convinced himself it's there when it's not. And, you know, like maybe it got thrown out somewhere else. Maybe it was in a car that, or something, you know, like, and it got thrown out outside of a Wendy's, wherever, you know, he's located in the UK. So they probably don't have Wendy's, whatever the baked bean fast food restaurants they have there, whatever.
Yeah. So it was this one. Okay. Yeah. I do remember it correctly. So in 2013, James Howe has been hoping to recover a laptop hard drive that he says contains the private key for cryptocurrency, which he says he mined in 2009. And they've been following it. The alleged number of Bitcoins has changed a bit, but Hal is now saying he lost about 8,000 Bitcoins. And as you know, the price has gone up. But I'm pretty sure his girlfriend threw it away.
Yeah,
I think that was the story because he was like really upset when he asked her, like, hey, where's the laptop that I had underneath my bed that was running or something? And she was like, oh, yeah, I donated that to Goodwill. Fascinating story. I can't wait to see. I hope he does find the laptop in the landfill. I'm rooting for this guy.
It's true. I mean,
I want to believe that he can make this happen.
He spent so much money and so many years looking for this laptop already. He got like, he raised like, I think, tens of millions of dollars from investors to pay for the excavation. They get some portion of the Bitcoin he recovers.
Did you ever hear Jimmy? So Jimmy Song once told us a story about somebody. I don't remember the story. Maybe Jimmy can share it on Stacker News. But he said that somebody like lost their private key or something, and he was able to recover with a portion of it or something. He did like some math wizardry or whatever, and he was able to recover that Bitcoin. So that's the only story I ever heard of somebody recovering Bitcoin that they lost was when Jimmy told me that story. I was like, what? That's insane. So I think this would be pretty magical if he's able to get access to all this Bitcoin. And then it's such a such a great story.
That
I want to see happen for the guy.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. It'd be a heck of a story.
Would you do the same thing? Would you buy the landfill?
I probably would have given up. I probably would have given up I probably would have, all that time and money, he probably could have, you know, maybe had a couple Bitcoin.
Austin, maybe it's not 700. What would you do, Austin?
Man, yeah, I don't know. It's like, my question goes back to that certainty. It would be like my level of certainty that it's in the dump. It's like if I was at a certain threshold of like 99.9%, I might just be like, hey, this is my hobby for the rest of my life. I'm going to piece by piece clean out this dump.
Yeah.
Like, I can imagine myself accepting that if I'm 99.9% certain there's 8,500 Bitcoin sitting in there. Mm. But at the same time, I mean, it's such a misery. And this is like my biggest fear in Bitcoin is losing my Bitcoin, which, I mean, it should be.
Yeah.
But how do you think he's going to do it, though? Like, do you think he'll just hire people? Because, like, what if they find it and then they don't tell him? It's a big dump.
Yeah, no, that's hard. How do you even create a process for that? Like, I would just freaking take it if it was me. But, you know. I actually have, like, a miniature version of this myself. I have, like, a million sats that I lost in a wallet where I copied the seed words to, it was a single sig with a passphrase, had two identical copies of the seed words, two identical copies of the passphrase, and they don't work. And it's like, I set it up with this very careful process that I do.
Dude, this could be you in 10 years.
So I know, it's like, yeah, I know that it's one character or just one or two characters off.
Pleb dev loses
and probably in the passphrase.
And probably in the passphrase. And in the future, my plan is I'm going to mine it once that million sats becomes valuable enough for me. And it's like, it's probably within a reasonable amount of time I can brute force the rest of the
What's that the saying? Key. Why wait for tomorrow what
depending
you can do
Depending on the length of the passphrase.
What's that saying? Why wait for tomorrow what you can do today? There you go.
Yeah, you know, I'll write the code tomorrow.
So that's that one. And then the other one I wanted to share was this one. So ex-Google boss Eric Schmidt fears for Bin Laden AI scenario. This is crazy. So the former chief executive of Google is worried artificial intelligence could be used in a Bin Laden scenario or rogue states to harm innocent people. He said, the real fears that I have are not the ones that most people talk about in AI. I talk about extreme risk. He goes, I'm always worried about the Osama bin Laden scenario where you have some truly evil person who takes over some aspect of our modern life and use it to harm innocent people. That's what he's afraid about with AI. Keon.
Yeah, he's afraid of basically a terrorist armed with AI.
There you go.
Which is pretty, you know, it's a pretty reason. I think a reasonable thing to be afraid of if AI becomes really powerful. Gets in the hand of
Do you think that's possible to happen, though?
Yeah. But I mean, you know, but if... That's the thing. If AI is like well distributed, we should have AI defenses against such things. But you know, you can't really defend against a nuclear bomb. So some of these things, like even if you have nuclear bombs yourself, they're not doesn't mean you have defense against them. So maybe that's true with AI. Some people think about these things a lot. You could just find decades of internet. Forums to people talking about this kind of stuff. Think, you know, they've thought through mitigations to scenarios like this and all of these types of
maybe scenarios. This is how like the end of the world happens, right? Like maybe like, you know, people are always saying, oh, there's aliens. Does aliens exist? Do they, maybe they just never advance past the AI stage because they can never get past that stage. And that's why we don't see any aliens.
I mean, most sci-fi has some aspect. I mean, Dune is really popular right now, and that's like...
Do they make it past? I guess they do make it past the AI.
Yeah, Dune makes it, but they have to like snuff out the machines, and then, but it's still, they're still, you know, like echoes through the rest of their civilization, this past where they had a war with machines. Somehow they won. Anyway, but...
Austin, what do you think, Austin? Do you think this is possible?
Are we going to win?
It's just, this is so mid to me.
Oh, shit.
Sorry, this is so
cracks,
mid to me.
Cracked
out. Are you calling
Eric Schmidt?
Are you calling Eric Schmidt mid, or are you calling me for like picking the story?
This is what a dude like this thinks about. This, to me, this is like Tether announcing that they're going to make a brain chip.
An
open
are
source brain
a,
chip.
Are
it's
they
like,
gonna,
make an open source phone.
No, did
How
they say
that?
Did they say that?
Yeah.
Where
Y'all
is
didn't
that?
Talk about that?
Where is that?
No,
that
I didn't even know that was a thing.
No way.
They announced that in Plan B, El Salvador.
Oh, it's not in the top stories.
So. I think we just ignore their stuff.
Yeah. But anyway, it's just like, I used to be into the X risk thing, which I already think is like pretty mid at this point. And then in X risk, this is like the most mid take on a thing to be worried about. Because it's like you said, physical reality is much more scary. Because it's like, oh, you're going to bully me? Bro, I can just shut my eyes and just close the laptop. It's like the same kind of thing. It's like, yeah, not necessarily true. Of course, AI is taking, you know, more control over it. But there's a lot more X risks that I would worry about before this. But actually, I don't think about X risk anymore at all. Because it is not empowering. And there's nothing really to do about it, I think.
Especially for mere plebs like us. But I guess when you're like a, you know, multi-billionaire who's at like Davos and stuff, this is probably what they all think about.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
exactly. And that's
worried.
My point is the level of problems that they're thinking at, like Pavel or whatever from Tether. He's like, well, I have the most profitable company in the world. What am I worried about? It's like Neuralink is closed source. It's like, really, that's the level of concern that he's living at. And it's like, all right, have fun with that, bro. You know, I'm trying to keep my bank account
how do you,
positive.
How would you make, I guess, okay, that's a great take, but Austin, how would you keep yourself from not thinking like that over time?
You mean as you become yeah. wealthy as this man?
Yeah. Go out and touch grass, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, you probably have to get like this, and it's probably the right thing to do.
Yeah, because someone needs to think about it. Yeah.
Move on to bigger problems, right? Like, yeah. if I had $1 billion, I should probably need to reconcile with some of the biggest problems in the world, because I have enough energy resources, to facilitate towards the biggest problems in the world.
Yeah. No. I thought that was an interesting post.
Yeah, I think that.
So you're sense. All right, Schmidt.
The other one I want to bring up was the Bitcoin payments from digital gold to everyday currency. This was from DS3 post this week. But he was talking about the Breeze technology report. Then I was talking to Danny today, or this week, from Breeze. He was also bringing it up. But yeah, on the consumer payment side, which the stackers will care about, it looks like these are the custodial wallets they have inside of here. Obviously, it's... I don't know. How do you end up in these things?
I don't know.
I always wonder.
I wonder why they said Moon as custodial.
And then self-custodial wallets. Then you have your remittance applications like Strike. And then the neobanks. And I thought this was an interesting page because Francisco runs Yopaki inside of Plublab. So.
Oh, is he listed here?
Yeah, he was listed there.
Dude.
They're non-custodial, which I think was interesting. Now my thing is stuck. Seven last week.
These are wallets that use Breeze SDK.
It's sort of a survey of
like the space
of the space. Yeah. I think there is probably a bias towards services that are using Breeze SDK or potential Breeze SDK customers. Maybe. But
yeah, I just wanted to share that. And then the other thing is early days. We're on episode 4 now.
Dude,
I don't know if you guys
catch racking them up.
Look, there's Carr from like 5 weeks ago. Look at that guy.
Wow, how's he doing? You think now?
He's probably doing great. Looks like he got a new haircut
or old
haircut. Yeah, we're on Spotify, so if you get a chance,
is that Anne Hathaway in your daily mix?
What?
It's like where?
Here,
strawberry blonde Anne Hathaway. I know. I'm just messing.
No, that's Ringo Death Star.
Oh, okay.
And I was listening to the new Ryan Zach. Shout out Ryan Zach. He's a Bitcoiner.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Okay. He looks like a Bitcoiner. Yeah.
Anyways, but I wasn't trying to show that. I was trying to show this.
Computer screen time.
Check out the Early Days podcast. Some good stuff there. I think the most popular one has been the Shopster one. It's cool seeing Cal grow. So
that had the most people on it, right?
No, that one was the Lightning Bounties one.
All right.
But yeah, the Shopster one is like a really popular one from this series.
People love Shopster.
Cool. And that's everything from this week as far as posts. We're going to jump into the top stackers.
Top stackers.
This week we have...
I'm at the top again.
All these guys.
Darn you guys. All right. I might have to just...
Three orders of magnitude.
I might have to nerf myself more. But
Ray Ruby,
yeah,
Aardvark,
Simple Stacker, ZeroX Bitcoiner, Den.
Simple Stacker's new. I've never seen Simple Stacker, or maybe change his icon. Oh no, stacking since 22. Oh, okay, maybe just change
Simple Stacker made their first PR recently. Oh, wow. They're an economics professor.
Oh, cool.
Speaking of advanced degrees, but they are proficient at programming. Which is pretty awesome. So they made a PR.
Nice.
Yeah.
What else we got? We got Max at 55. Yeah, I think that's everything here. And let's see. Let's jump into the top Cowboys.
The best segment in the world.
Next week, the Cowboys will be somebody else. Here we go. We got Cowboys, Coob. Undisciplined.
117 still in the running.
Blockchain Boog.
TN Stacker.
Mm-hmm.
Gray Ruby.
Yep.
Still stacking. Still stacking on all these cowboy hats. Public Enemy. Has a gun.
Yep.
Ooh, look at all those hiders. They're all just clustered up like that.
Bitcoin Pleb Devs there too.
Oh, let's go.
Bitcoin News showing
up. Let's go.
been zapping some more.
There's some new
zapping.
Been stacking some people.
Yeah, yeah, I've been stacking. Been stacking songs.
Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, you should. yeah, my zaps on Stacker News, way more fake and bloated than my zaps on... My zaps on Nost are way more fake and bloated than my zaps on Stacker News.
What do you mean fake and bloated?
You know, just fake and bloated, spoofed,
sibbled. Do you sibble your own zaps on Nostr?
I do far more than that, but I don't even really screw around with it anymore, but it's pretty far skewed. But spoofed it. When I go on Stacker News and try and sibble, I just end up giving more sats to the stackers. It's really a tragedy.
Yes, so that's what we want.
Jump into the boost this week.
Boosts.
We got Pies, 2025 vibes. He loves it. He says to shoot guns, take mushrooms, work out, laugh, hug each other, get angry, get silly, inspect, curse, be proud. What does this stand for?
Like Italian food.
Like Italian food, fist pump, and F you.
Flip some
off. Gotta love it. We got Tongue17 said, wow, so like. I don't get that.
Nice, Tongue.
What does that mean? We got Blockchain Boosts. Haha, great episode. Austin was fantastic. Didn't know he was so deep. The Enron thing. Keep it up, guys.
Blockchain Boosts.
Austin, are you that deep? I guess you were.
It was surprisingly deep that day.
Well, it's just philosophical topics, you know.
Yeah, you have to bring it out.
I guess Blockchain Boog is... Oh, yeah, Austin came in hot last week, says he was a scammer.
Scammer. The
Enron thing, which was the Enron thing again? I don't remember that.
Oh, the guys, they bought the Enron trademark for like $35.
Yeah, that's fun.
That reminds me. That's kind of crazy. I was going to say this last week, and I forgot. But I'll say it right now. We need to buy... BitConnect. That was BitConnect, right?
Yeah. I thought they already changed that.
Like an absolutely ruined and tarnished brand. There's something about that idea that seems really strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, like buy BitConnect, buy XRP one day, wait a few years.
Okay.
Cool. That's all I got. Kia, what do you do this weekend?
This weekend, I am... working a little bit, and then I'm starting my vacation.
Yeah, so for the Stackers at home, they're listening. Keon's going on vacation starting on Sunday. We won't see him for like 2 weeks, I think. Week and a half?
It's about, yeah, but I'll be back a Wednesday later.
So Ted will be here to fill in for him next week.
Yeah.
Which will be good.
Talking Ted.
And then maybe Austin will show up like he did this week.
Perhaps.
We got to book in advance to get Austin. He's a popular guy these days.
Oh, yeah. He might go to El Salvador. You never know. Plan B. Might be implanted a brain chip.
Who knows? This might be too small of a podcast for him now. We'll see.
That's true. Yeah,
I'm just kidding.
What about you? What are you doing this week?
Just work. We have like two workshops tomorrow, all that stuff.
The workshops? Okay.
Oh, never mind. We got a legal one, and then we have PR one. Yeah, that'll go out this week.
Okay.
Cool.
Fun stuff.
That's all we got for Stacker News Live this week. Stackers, have fun. Go out there, build something. Keep.